please consider calling into the show today. We have a number of hot topics, and your voice needs to be heard. Thoughts, Love, and Reflections is your opportunity to make sure your opinion is heard over the noise of the media. James T. Deshaies is committed to bringing the voice of the people to the world stage. He'll select topics, but your voice will be the focus. So take time to spend with him and inform the world of your views. We can no longer sit back and let others tell us what to think. The cost of being a silent majority is too great, and too many lives are being destroyed. The leaders around the world need to be put on notice that their jobs and careers depend on how well they listen. Call in on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 657-383-0309, or Thursdays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 347-855-8867, or Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 657-383-0309. Why don't you add Thoughts, Love, and Reflections to your weekly schedule? If you have story ideas or topics of discussion, contact James Deshaies at 407-394-9819 or email djames82@aol.com.
USI never had it so good. 101.1 radio, the best R&B and hip hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good radio now on 101.1, and it's 24/7, the world's best radio station. Never better get checked. Ain't no different second when the king
goes dead. This is your host, James T. Deshaies of Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. As always, you know I'm happy to be here with you and have the opportunity to exchange ideas and think about what's going on in our world and what kind of steps do we need to take to impact the things that are happening. I want to tell you a little about myself again, and periodically I do share some things with you. I stand about 6'6", and weigh a lot more than I should. But, you know, I have a soft spot in my heart for life and living and humanity. I have empathy for people, and I have a concern about people living their lives to the fullest. And I want to believe that we as humans should look out for one another. You know, the world is getting smaller and smaller and smaller every day that we talk. The internet has given us access to people that we never thought we'd ever have access to. And so today we find ourselves able to talk to people all around the world. We're able to see images around the world that just impacts your heart when you look at what some people are going through. And today I had one of those moments. I had one of those moments where I really had to reflect and think about my feelings and thinking about my life. And think about, you know, my commitment to making my life better and my commitment to moving forward, and all the while I was thinking about what do I need to do to make my life better. And that's things that we ought to be doing. We ought to strive for our dreams as we go through life. But at the same time, we need to think about the lives of others. And America is starting to be very selfish. When I say that because Donald Trump and a lot of other people have a lot of issue with immigrants, and we are getting to have a bad taste in our mouths related to immigrants. And I saw this show today where an immigrant was on this show, and he told his story about how him and his brother were found in an orphanage by a white female who lived in Australia, and that both of them had disabilities. Both of their hands were deformed and their legs were deformed, but she loved them anyway, and she took them to Australia. And when she took them to Australia, she showed them so much love and helped them and had them get operations in order to make their lives better. And then, but lo and behold, these two young boys started to love this new mother and started to call her mother. And one of them had the ability to sing, and he sung a song on one of these shows where he was, it was called Amazing, and I just could not help but feel so much, I guess, love and for life, and the thought that this boy had everything going against him, but yet he was striving for his dream. And it let me feel like that, you know, I'm just overindulgent. And I think so many of America is overindulgent. And we have so much to be thankful for, but sometimes we lose sight of how much we have to be thankful for, and we become selfish. Just think about it. Millions of Middle Eastern people have been displaced from their homes and had to travel across oceans to get to Europe, and then travel across miles and miles to get to Germany and get to other places that might allow them to come in and have the opportunity for life. And then we see these people in Syria where children are being bombed every day, and they're pulling them out of rubble, and they don't have food to eat, they don't have medicine, and they don't have doctors. And we see these people in these deplorable situations, but yet we have people in America who want to deny them the right to come to this country, who are afraid to risk life when they look in the eyes of these people who have nothing. And we have so much, and we don't want to be able to, we don't want to offer anything. It is a sad commentary to who we are as Americans when we want to close our borders off to those who are living in despicable situations, and we have no empathy for the life that they're living, and we want to just protect our own. I'm going to just go out on a limb and just share something with you. If we did, in fact, bring 30,000 immigrants in from the Middle East, and they happen to be Muslims, and out of those 30,000 individuals, one or two of them happen to be committed to death of Americans, do you not see how important it would to be give life to 30,000 people if you fall, even if you were even fall prey to two or three? You know, Donald Trump's son compared Muslims to a bowl of Skittles and made the suggestion if there were four or five poisonous Skittles in a bowl, would you be willing to put your hand in that bowl and pull out those Skittles? If you were a person with a heart, a person with a heart and compassion for people who had less than you, for people who had been bombed out of their homes, for people who found themselves underneath rubble and had to be dug out by hand, I would think that you would have enough compassion to risk your life or to relinquish some of your safeties in order to give another opportunity to other immigrants. And I think it's just awful when we set aside and say, we don't want anybody in here because we want to be protected. We spend a whole lot of time killing ourselves. So what about the 30,000 people that die every year because of gun violence? What about those people? Why aren't we doing something to save those people if life is so important to us? And so we talk out of both sides of our mouths. Here we want to protect ourselves from children and women who have Muslim religion, but yet we don't protect ourselves or find a way to protect ourselves from each other. It doesn't make much sense to me. Here we are in a land of plenty where we have cable. We eat three meals a day. We eat all kind of fast food. We indulge in all kind of sweets. We indulge in everything we can think about where life is so good for us, and we never worry about where our next meal is going to come. But we have no empathy for people who can't go see a doctor, people who don't have medicine available to them when they get sick, people who don't have food to eat, people who have to rely on outside the world outside of their country to bring them food. What kind of world are we coming to when we're so willing to build a wall around ourselves and protect ourselves from the outside world and continue to want what's best for America? We want to be great again, as Donald Trump says, but at the price of closing other people out. How is that fair? How does that show any compassion? How does that show any love for humanity? We seem to be so stuck on our lifestyle and keeping it the way we want to, but we're giving no regard to the lifestyle of those who live outside of our world. Those people in the Middle East who find themselves full of dust all the time. Every once in a while, children have the opportunity to play outside and enjoy the sun and enjoy a swing. And we have areas where our kids get to go to Disney, go to SeaWorld, get to go to all these beautiful places and experience all these beautiful things. But yet we want to deny immigrants the opportunity to have a better life because we're so afraid of one or two of them that might find themselves wanting to kill us. But again, we kill ourselves without immunity. And so, you know, I was just thinking about that when I watched this little boy singing, and it brought some tears to my eyes to see that he was so lucky to be born and then meet this woman who was willing to take him and his brother in despite their deformities and then give them the courage to use the talent that God had given them. And he went on stage and sung this song so beautifully and brought everybody to tears. And one of the people said that we had a nerve to worry about such minuscule things when this boy has overcome so much in his short period of time. And I just think it's just despicable of us as Americans sometimes that we get so engrossed in our lives and all the things that we enjoy so much and the things that we can just go out and walk out and do every day. And I hold myself accountable as well. You know, I own two vehicles, and I don't worry about putting gas in them, and I don't have no concern about where my next meal is going to come or whether the electricity is going to go off or whether I don't have to worry about nobody blowing up my house. Those are not my concerns. I have very little to be concerned about. And then on top of that, you know, people like myself all over the world, all over the United States, who have no empathy for immigrants, no empathy for these Muslims who find themselves fleeing their country and who find themselves bombarded every day with shells and bullets and people trying to kill them. And we don't want them in our country. We want to turn our nose up at them and not reach a hand out to them. Who are we? Who are we? You need to ask yourself, who are we that we are so non-concerned about life other than our own greatness, other than our own becoming millionaires? It shows a very short-sightedness that we need to try to come to grips with. And so as I come to the quarter mark, the 15-minute mark, and I know I've been on my soapbox, I just want you to reflect on what it is we need to be saying to our elected officials, to our governors who have suggested that they don't want any immigrants coming into their state who can turn their back on the lives of other these people who are over there in some instances are in these situations because of things and decisions that we have made as a country, and we're unwilling to take some of these young people and these women in and give them a better life because of our fear of possibly being harmed. And again, we don't fear the murder rate that continues to go up every day in our country. We don't fear all these guns that we encourage people to buy in our country, but yet we're going to fear these innocent people because there may be one, two, or three of them that might bring us harm. I want us to reflect on that, and I want us to give some insight to what it is that we're doing and what part of being a good Samaritan are we playing in the world. Are we the kind of people who we want to assist others? We want to give and reach out a hand of assistance to people who need a hand up? Or are we going to just be selfish and enjoy prosperity while there are other people who are not even being fed or clothed or having the opportunity to grow to their full potential? We're going to take a break right now. And again, I know I've talked for about 15 minutes, and I want to again give us the opportunity to talk about who we are as a country And outside of the politics that we're dealing with, outside of the ugliness of police brutality, I want to talk about who we are as a country and where are we going. Are we going to be the type of country that Donald Trump has decided he wants us to be? Are we going to open our borders up to take in more immigrants and allow more people to live the American dream? Okay, again, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
I Am This Woman by James Deshaies. I am this woman. I am this woman that ascends the expectation of the world to take my rightful place among the stars. The woman who does not use the traditional roadmaps to a given place, but creates my own destination. I am this woman who maintains her intrinsic beauty in ways not determined by others' thoughts, but by my own sense of uniqueness, my own desire of sexiness and allure. I am this woman designed by my Creator to scale the heights of the unbound, allowing my talents to be seen by the masses while inspiring those who've yet to dream to greatness. I am the mother of the world, deserving the respect of all who walk under the gravity of the earth, igniting the love that exists in all men while being the birthplace of the future. I am this woman.
Women are truly the birthplace of the future. They are the ones who give birth to the world's children and who look after those children and who want so much for their children. And so how can we as Americans deny those in the Middle East who are being displaced, who are being forced out of their homes, an opportunity to see a better life for not only themselves, but their children, and we become so afraid of giving that opportunity to these kids and to these people, and that we build borders around ourselves to protect our gold and our treasures and our lives as though that we don't have an obligation to the world to give some type of assistance. We're going to go to the phone lines and just talk about who are we, what do we want to be known for, and how do we want to live our lives as though we want to be America, want to be great again, but we don't want to have any humanity, any empathy for the lives of others. Andre, are you there? What are your thoughts related to this and where we're going as a people and how do we want to ostracize other people and not give assistance to individuals who want an opportunity to have a decent lifestyle?
Well, I think we have to just continue dialogue within our communities and identify what path or what strategy would be best such that not only citizens, current citizens, can prosper and contribute with the skills and blessings that they have, but also, like you said, people that's coming from abroad. But I think it has to be an organized, strategic manner in which we do that. And when we talk about diversity and inclusion, of course, that benefits us all because the more diverse ideas we have and opportunities to have unity, the stronger we'll be as a nation. But if you look back, like I say, when we talk about America, we think about the strength of the different cultures in which we have. And who are we to say that people that's coming over won't, again, continue to help us continue to be the best country ever? But we do have to come up with a plan, and I think we have to do so with just regular scheduled meetings and dialogue and and conferences.
All right. Let me go to another caller. 9138. Tell me a little bit about what your thoughts are related to immigrants and how we ought to interact with determining how we determine how people come into our country. Or are we going to just shut off our borders and not allow people the opportunity for freedom and safety and the opportunity to grow and allow their talents to take them to their highest heights? What are your thoughts?
You know, I think when it comes to immigrants, you know, and just people coming from different countries that ain't doing as well, as they call them, third world countries, I think that the Donald Trump situation is just like no heart. I have a heart for people. So when it comes to immigrants, I put myself as one, you know, because as a minority, you know what I mean, I can do so. And I wouldn't want doors to be closed on me because of who I am or where I come from. And I wouldn't want to do that to other people who's trying to better their life. Not everybody that's an immigrant is a bad person. And none of us should be pointing the finger and judging and trying to pick and decide who's bad or who's good. And none of us should be trying to make everybody pay because it might be one bad or good, because it's a lot of bad people in the United States as well as coming as immigrants. So, you know, I totally disagree with the building of the wall and making everybody go out. But I agree with people who got a heart just to help people and want to be there for people, and immigrants that want to come over to this country to better their lives and make a better future for their families and their children. I'm definitely for them.
And that's so important, because how hypocritical is it for us to ask people like Germany and France and England and other countries to take on the responsibilities of these people who are fleeing the Middle East, and then not do our fair share to try to protect ourselves from them? Again, I understand the need for safety, but when you are refusing to take tens of thousands of people because of your fear of a small minority group, that is just totally ridiculous. Again, we have a lot of people who are home-born here in our country and raised, who killed more people than we, you know, we need to get rid of some of these people who are natural-born citizens who are doing a lot of killing every day and doing some despicable things. So my thought is that we shouldn't be turning our backs on any of these immigrants who find their way here, who are going through the process. Now, I believe in going through a process. I believe that you shouldn't sneak into the country, but if you go through a process that has been deemed sufficient, you should be given an opportunity to live your life here in America. And we need to just stop following this racist, biased behavior that seems to be a part of the GOP or the Republican Party. I don't want to be the country that Donald Trump has written down or designed, and I think we need to speak up and make sure that we don't follow this road that he seems to be bent on taking us down. Audrey, what kind of restrictions do you think there ought to be? I mean, I understand that right now there's almost a three-year process that individuals from the Middle East have to go through, where they have to take classes in order to be indoctrinated into how we live our lives. But do we need to go much further than that, than we already doing, if it's taking 2 to 3 years to get into this country where you guys go through a formal process? What more do we want the people to do?
That we have in place is sufficient. Again, we just have to make sure that we work through that. And I think that in return, our government has to take additional steps to identify within that three-year period, if you would, of members who may be out to do us harm. I think that would be a very a small number. Again, the majority of the people are good-hearted and, again, just trying to improve their livelihood, families, and who wouldn't want and provide better for their families. But we do have to make sure that we put some things in place to reduce and or mitigate the ones who don't necessarily have a good intent. Because whether you're a citizen or non-citizen, we're dealing with individual human beings, and human beings make bad choices. We came into the world sinners, and so with that, we already behind the eight ball of making bad decisions. So to answer your original question, I think what we have in place, that three-year period, that's ample time. That we just...
But, you know, the thing is, we cannot completely eliminate the threat of individual terrorists. You know, we have to just come to the understanding that there's no way that we can individually eliminate the possibility of being bombed, the possibility of being shot. You can't totally eliminate that, because some of the people that come to our country through means of military, when we send our soldiers off to other parts of the world, some of them come back with their minds changed. So we need to ask ourselves, what kind of country do we want to be? We want to be the kind of country that cares and loves other individuals. We want to be a country that decides that, hey, we're rich and we don't want no more of you all in to our country. We don't want to sacrifice or subject ourselves to any danger, so we don't want any other people coming into our country. 4337, let us know, what kind of country do you think we should be in regards to immigration? And should we now just close our borders off and say, the heck with them, we just going to do what's best for America?
I can see it from either point. You know, when we talk about stereotyping and profiling, realistically, when we look at terrorists here in America, the ones who've done the most damage are white, Christian, and male. They've killed more people. They've done the most damage. So when we talk about profiling, they'll never profile, and we don't even hear that. But if we're going to have honest conversations, we have to have honest conversations in regard to that thing as well. So I can understand us talking about somebody coming from another country and we want to, you know, control our borders. Well, you know, America has a reputation of going around the world doing certain things to people, and not saying that we're justified or unjustified, but at some point, it's like the African-Americans here, eventually you're going to get tired of it. And when you do, it's going to be a change. So I'm all for America. I salute our troops. But it's not our troops that's doing it. It's the people that are in power that were mentioned earlier that don't want to do the right thing. I'll be honest with you. I was a Democrat all my life. I'm about to turn 50, and I quit being a Democrat in 2000 because there was not one white person that would stand up and say that the election was stolen. So the Congressional Black Congress said, hey, man, we just need one senator to stand up and say this is not right, and nobody would stand up and say that it was not right. So we, as African Americans, we have to stop looking to other people to bail us out. You know, we have to create our own economies of scale. We have to have united voting blocks. We have to get the people who are not willing to vote to get motivated, understanding what this means. Not just that your predecessors went out and voted, but hey, this is the value to you. And if we don't create value to those people who are uninformed, we can always be at the back of the bus screaming, give me a handout.
And, you know, you made a good point. You know, a lot of people don't know the history of Christianity and how powerful and terroristic it was. At one point, there was a time when people went throughout the world pushing Christianity, and if you refused to convert, you would be killed. And so, you know, a lot of times when they badmouth the Middle East and some of this terrorists about cutting people's heads off, they don't recognize, they may need to be a little more mindful of how evil England was, how evil America has been in certain times. You know, there is a push in Hawaii right now for Hawaii to gain back control of itself by those people who were the original Hawaiians and who don't appreciate the fact that America has taken over Hawaii and made it its 50th state. So there are a lot of situations where things are going on where we were the ones who went in and took over countries and, again, were the birth, our nation was birthed by an imperialistic regime in, known as England. So we need to really take a look at when we're trying to close off our borders and suggest nobody else has the right to come in, we went in and took control a lot of places that weren't ours to begin with. So I'm going to go back to 4337. Give me, let me understand, what are your thoughts about the evilness of Christianity at one point and how it was just as bad, if not worse, than some of the Muslims and some of the things that they're doing?
Well, when we look at the three main religions, Christianity, Muslim religion, and Judaism, they all have the same father, Abraham. So Abraham's wife, Sarah, gave the concubine Hagar. So Ishmael come, that's where the Muslim religion come from. So when we look at it, we have more DNA that's in common, 99% of it, than what's different as far as religion is concerned. So it's like you either say cousins or brothers to each other. But we find ways to divide ourselves. It's like you think in the 60s when, you know, the urban areas started to grow, they built highways right through the middle of the city. Somebody who used to be your neighbor is now your enemy because you got this wall or this separation based on an interstate. Where you used to be one unit, now you're two or three. So Christianity has gone around the world. There are three things that they always do. They come in with their missionaries. They then come in with their merchants selling stuff, and then they come in with their military and say, we're going to take over. And until we develop something like that in our communities, like we have been taught that the Nation of Islam is so bad. Well, they may be, and I'm not here to say that they're good or bad, but you don't see the police doing a whole bunch of them. And if you go and attack them, they're going to fight back. I mentioned yesterday, if they cut our water off in the black neighborhood, what are we going to do? Or if they told us we couldn't shop at Publix or Walmart, what are we going to do? We don't produce anything. You know, if you can't run, you can't jump, you can't sing, they have no use for you. And when you want to voice your opinion, hey, we paying you a whole bunch of money, sit down and shut up. And when we think in terms of it, we get just they just said we gave $38 billion to Israel. And that's a motivation to get somebody to win the election. We got people that are starving right here, right now. And when we think in 1948, the United States, Britain, and Germany decided that the Middle East is going to be created. I mean, ain't nowhere in the Bible say that was going to happen. Now, I'm not saying that Jews shouldn't be there, but nowhere in the Bible did it say America, Great Britain, and Germany should decide that a country that was named after a bunch of people, there was no physical Israel in the Bible. They talked about the people, but America decided that it should be. And that we should follow that. So when we look at Christianity, all you got to do is look at the Dark Ages, how white people treated each other. And we shouldn't be surprised at how they treated us. They set people on fire. They accuse you of being a witch, this, that, and other. So they have the reputation and the capability of doing this. And the fact that they're scared of black men, you see the reasoning for all of this stuff happening to us. And if we don't look at it realistically, our kids is going to be generation after generation self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, are there good white people out there that help us? Yeah, they are. But there are a lot more that see bad stuff from the bad ones that were mentioned earlier and don't say one word. And if you don't say anything, you're part of the problem. And if you
well,
feel
you
like
know,
black
one
people
thing
being
to bring up in terms of Israel, we badmouth a lot of these immigrants as part of the problem for our economic situation. But at the same time, we never hear any of either the Democrats or Republicans suggest that we need to not spend as much money or give as much money to Israel for their protection. that maybe we need to kind of pull back on some of these purse strings that we're doing, giving all this money away, and some you know, until times get better where we spend that money on our roads and our situation and not blaming on immigrants, because we're not giving these immigrants that are coming over here are not the ones that got these huge amount of tax dollars that we're giving away each and every year. And in some instances, immigrants are helping our economy. The immigrants that are coming from the south of our border, we wouldn't get our fruit picked if it wasn't for those immigrants. Some of those immigrants do jobs that Americans have abandoned. In a lot of instances, you find that their work are heavy labor work type work that Americans are no longer interested in, that Hispanics and Latinos are now doing because nobody is interested in being in the hot sun all day. So a lot of times where we are as a nation economically is based on the immigrants coming to this country and feeling comfortable doing that kind of work, making the beds in these nice hotels. Donald Trump's hotels have benefited from immigrants. And he often even went and recruited immigrants in his hotels down in Miami so that they would be well-staffed because, according to him, there were no Americans who wanted those jobs. So we need to be mindful of the fact that we cannot lay things off on immigrants as the reason why we're having some tough times. Some of the tough times we're having because we are not really evaluating how much money we're giving away to other nations and how much we should allow them to protect themselves.
I agree with that. When we think in terms of the Republican Party, if you look at the red states, 99% of the lowest income counties, or 95 of them, are in red states. But that's not the idea or the way they frame it. They make it seem like the urban areas are that area. When we think of a state like Rhode Island, it's got the same number of senators as California. But the number of people in Rhode Island don't even compare to California. So when we talk about this Electoral College, I mean, there's so much that we have to consider when we talk about politics. And like I said yesterday, when it comes to politics, race, and money, ain't no Jesus Christ involved. Because if it was, we wouldn't be talking about, you know, blacks being killed the way that they are. So when we have conversations, we have to be honest with each other, and we have to, you know, own up to our portion of it and saying that, you know what, if we're going to have any conversation, it needs to be realistic. And if it's not going to be realistic, then don't play with me. You know, it's bottom line. So we can get caught up in the nuances, you know, the friendliness of it. You know, white folks ain't trying to be friendly with us. They trying to maintain their status quo. So when we look at this thing, it's like, you know what? Don't play with me and don't play with this and tell me the truth. If you ain't going to tell me the truth, I'm going about my business. But until we get to that point where we have realistic conversations and understand, look how they treated each other before they got here. And when we look at, when we talk about large government is never a problem until it is about to help black people. And 70% of black people work for federal, state, or local government. That's why they're always saying they want to reduce it. And we don't understand that dynamic. In the private industry, unless we own the business, we don't get a lot of jobs out of it. So, you know, we have to make sure that we understand how the argument is framed. We have to understand, you know, what message they're sending to us. And if we're uninformed, they were always wondering what happened, and they keep it moving. And because they're always prepared for us coming up with something, you know, we're in a situation where we're playing catch-up all the time. And until we're willing to do the honest thing, the right thing, it's going to keep happening to us. And then we pass, and then our kids come along. It's just a self-fulfilling prophecy. So when we think voting in, I think someone said it yesterday, you know, your state, your local, and your county elections. But if black people don't see any value in that, then nothing ever changes.
All right,
so who do we have to go out to the communities?
take our second break, and we're at our 30-minute mark, the halfway point. We're going to continue our conversation about the direction we want our country to go in, or if we're going to be to allow ourselves to block everyone out and just take advantage of our the goodness of our country.
There's a train a coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. You don't need no ticket, you just think along. So people get ready for the train to Georgia, picking up passengers coast to coast. Faith is the key, open the doors of boredom. There's hope for all among those loved the most. The hopeless sinner who would hurt all mankind just to save his own. Believe me now, have pity on those whose chances grow thinner. For there's no hiding place against the kingdom's throne. You know there's no hiding place. There's no hiding place. So people get ready. There's a train of coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. You don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord. People get ready.
This is James C. Deshaies, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, and coming to you, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. You know, there are a lot of images out there that represent the United States of America. The Statue of Liberty, you know, give us your downtrodden. And we were asking the world, you know, this was a gift that was given to us because we said we were willing to take the immigrants from anywhere to give them an opportunity to start over, give them an opportunity to have the American dream where we're tolerant of religions, tolerant of races, and tolerant of all different types of differences. But yet now, here we, as we move beyond 2016, we seem to be focused on denying people the right to enter our country, to take an opportunity to take advantage of being free to use their talents in a way that will allow them to go to greatness. And we're just talking about, are we willing to continue in this effort as Donald Trump has displayed, where we close off our borders and refuse to let people in because now we're scared of fulfilling that part of who we are. But we're not in fear of the people who are natural born, who have guns and who have access to explosives and who might kill us as well. So I want to go out to the phone lines and just ask, who do we want to be as a country? Regina? Regina, this is James coming to you.
Okay, tell me what was your question again?
Here we are as a nation we are afraid to allow immigrants in from the Middle East, from a place where we had some taking their country being destroyed, their children and their women being under siege by men who are raping them and destroying their homes, but yet we want to put these restrictions on them from coming into our country when we are a part of the reason why they're fleeing their own nation. And so we're asking millions and millions of other, we're asking other countries to take in millions of these immigrants that we've helped to displace, but yet we're not willing to take on any additional ones ourselves. How does that make us a leader of the world?
Well, I believe that it really doesn't make us a leader of the world, and it really, too, does not go along with what our Constitution stands for and what the Statue of Liberty says, you know, home of the free and the brave. Not home of the free and the brave, but, you know, send us all of your different people.
I don't know all
you're
of
down
these,
trying, you're tired. You're lost.
Hello?
Yeah, I hear
Hello?
You.
Okay.
I hear
send
you.
Us, you're tired, you're brave, I think the gentleman was trying to help me out with that.
Right. You're downtrodden, yeah. We were willing to take on everybody.
Right, right. And now it seems as though we're trying not to be the melting pot that we were known to be. And I'm just not too sure how that is going to play out in the future.
Well, I just think that we are trying to blame too much of our issues, our problems on immigrants. You know, when I look at my personal situation and people are telling me that America is going in the wrong situation, wrong direction, I just find that hard to believe when, you know, when we go in our stores, they're full of food, when we go to our gas stations, for the most part, problem, unless we have, like, an issue with one of the pipelines with a damage to it. But for the majority of the time that Barack Obama has been in office, our gas prices have gone down, and gas has been plentiful, and people have been working, but yet we want to suggest that we're in bad shape when other countries are in far worse shape than we are, and the amount of money that these people earn, we earn so much more money per person than probably any other country in the world. We talk about China.
Yes.
China is really taking advantage of its people and exploiting its people, and that was the reason why they are able to loan us so much money, is because they're taking advantage of their people. The country owns everything. So when you, it's hard to, you know, I find it amazing. How do you compare America to China when the Chinese don't own nothing? The country owns everything, and they're the ones making all the profit. And so here in America, we can individually make profit off of our own work. So you got to know that you can't make more money than China does when it puts people to work a little or nothing. Those people are making a slave labor. Come on, we need to be realistic about what it is that's happening in China and some of these other places and why their economy might look better.
You know, we have to consider, too, when we talk about the whole immigrant thing, we have these countries that have dual citizenship. So if they go to China or they go to the Caribbean, they say, well, you can't tax me. Well, when they get over there and the country takes advantage of them, then they want us to use our tax dollars to come to defend them. When we look at stuff like the disease or the infection Ebola, how is it that it started in the center of Africa, the Congo, and then it jumps all the way over to Ghana? There's like six or seven countries in between there. And when we look over in Somalia, they got these oil pipe. Yes. Hello?
I hear you.
Yeah, so if we think those gas pipelines over there, Exxon and Texaco are over there, and if the disease was as contagious as they said, why didn't you pull your people out and put them in a safe place, send them back to America? So it makes me wonder, is this thing really a hoax? So we create these drugs, Africans on them, and say they got to be on for the rest of their life, these AIDS drugs, and we go over there to help them find water, and then the pumps and machinery that we put in don't work, and then they can't pay for it. So now they indebted us for life. We got this fiat money here in our country that only has value because we believe it has value. It needs to be tied to something like gold or diamonds or some resource, but we don't have a resource in America other than oil, and oil is so volatile. So when we look at the whole immigrant thing, you hear Republicans now talking about Donald Trump saying, why can't we use the nuclear option? Fool, you got the an army or military that's 19 times the size of the all the rest of the world combined, and you saying you want to invest more into it. So we have to understand that people are making decisions that are not in our best interest. And after a couple of years, they say the stuff is obsolete, and we've never even gotten to use it. So somebody's benefiting from that, and we're buying the Kool-Aid and drinking it at the same time. And that has nothing to do with an immigrant because, again, when we look at the profile of a terrorist in America, it's white, Christian, and male. But that's not the face that they put on it to describe who, you know, terrorists are.
But
so, you
part
know,
of what
we,
you said, but that's one of the issues that I have, and I'm not trying to, you know, we're going to have plenty of time in the next 2 days to really jump on Donald Trump and his what he thinks. But part of the issue is people just don't use common sense. When you say don't think, you need to also include in that white America. First of all,
we
can no longer use nuclear weapons. You can't use, once we were the ones that used it on Japan, saw what kind of damage that it did. So therefore, it is just not conceivable that we would want a war of that type again. I mean, it's just crazy. You can't, nobody wants to experience that many people dying and being impacted by that kind of explosion for long term. That's the only reason why North Korea is wanting it, because everyone else who has it know that it's not reasonable to even think about using it. And the fact that Donald Trump wants to suggest that it is part of what's on the table is crazy. We cannot use it. It is not an effective weapon. We don't want to be killing as many people as we can. Anytime you're in conflict, the last thing you want to do is kill as many people as you can. You want to kill fewer people than you can. You want to do less damage, because right now our world is so small that it would impact us. If you shot off a nuclear weapon, at some point that same nuclear stuff would come back to us. We'd get a result of it.
Yeah,
every time you have a huge impact of a weather change somewhere, it affects everything else. So our world is too small for us to use those kind of weapons. It just doesn't make any sense. And so can't have, like you say, everybody needs to become aware and knowledgeable that those kind of thought processes don't work in the society that we presently live in. It did when we did it, and now we recognize that we can't do it anymore, or should recognize that we can't do it anymore. Regina, what are your thoughts about that? Do you think we really can be in a position where Donald Trump could you think really think about using a nuclear weapon?
Hold on, I'm gonna let someone else give you some a thought on that. Another listener, okay?
Okay.
Hold on. About Donald Trump and Lucia West.
This is Terrence Hunter. Terrence Hunter. As far as Trump and the nuclear weapons, I feel, and I've also talked to a couple of people in Charlotte, because I'm originally from Charlotte, North Carolina, by the way. And with everything going on here in Charlotte and listening to Donald Trump, especially with the nuclear weapons, he's going to be our war monroe, and that's what really he wants to do. He really wants to show that, you know, he keeps on his platform of making America great. So his first agenda, or his agenda, is to show that, you know, the United States is not, you know, it's not to be pushed around anymore. And for so what he says, he wants to, you know, drop a bomb on Russia or drop a bomb on one of these other countries. That's going to be something that's going to be a reality if he does get elected. I think we just need to realize that what he says, millions of other people feel, but they're not just going to come out the woke. They're not going to say anything that's going to make him stand up there and say, yeah, we're behind you, 100%. And just when he gets into office, I believe, truly believe, that we will see our true Caucasian friends rise up and try to annihilate the melanoid race, because that's the whole point from the beginning. You know, we come here, we think we, you know, us as African Americans, we believe in, we're by nature, we're sun. We live off the land. Our Caucasian brothers and sisters, they're all about survival. So they're trying to fight, kill, and destroy anything they have. And if you read through history, that's all they've done. They've destroyed everything in Europe. And then when they came over here, they try to wipe out our Indian brothers and sisters. But we have to realize one thing: we have to learn the game. And once we learn the game, and if we unite, and that's the biggest thing, we're not uniting together. We're not standing together and, you know, making our presence felt. We have everybody telling us what to do, but we're not coming up together, and we have no unity. But I'm sorry I went off on a tangent. My mind is in the 10 million places, but I think the original question was about Donald Trump and nuclear weapons. That's a fearful thing for me.
He's going to do what he says.
Well, let me just say this to you. I really believe that we have some military people who would be willing, and who've already stated when he did that he was going to go and he was going to do waterboarding and even more. There were some military people came up who said they were not going to put their lives on the line and to be put in court for doing something that is against the rules. So Donald Trump has some opposition in the military that are not going to let him do that. Guys, we got someone special on the line who I want to bring in and just talk with real quickly. We're at our last 30 minutes. The last couple of programs, we've been given an extra 30 minutes. And we have a gentleman who is a police officer that I want to just give the opportunity to talk to us and just give us his thoughts related to where we are in terms of what the police departments across the nation are finding themselves involved in when it comes to the abuse of African-American males. So 5970, give us your name and where you're calling from, and give us some insight of what your thoughts are related to where law enforcement is right now in 2016.
Well, 5970, my name is Zach, and I'm retired now. But as I watch things unfold on television, I think that the community that I served in, I truly served it. And I think that agencies need to get back to understanding that they are servants of the people, not that the people are there to serve them. Some of the egos that are brought forth in law enforcement, I think we don't put enough demands on even our public officials who watch something happen. They sit on the sidelines, they say nothing. And so we have to get involved even in the voting of some of our local officials, as well as our state reps, the Senate, and some of those other things. I'm not against policing the neighborhoods, because I think you have to do that, but there's a way that you go about and do that. And oftentimes I would educate the people that I came across on the things that what police could do and what they couldn't do, as well as at times, if I felt that an officer was doing something that they don't need to do, I would say it. But sometimes especially early on when you don't understand what is what, you have a tendency to not say anything at all. But I think the people who could deal with some of those issues, and then there's a disconnect because sometimes you don't get the officials or some of the people that represent the people to understand the issues of the people from a daily standpoint. And sometimes they get and it's not about the public officials, but sometimes they get their title mixed up with servant because that's what they are. They are a servant of the people. But and then some of the training, a lot of the training, when you're given scenarios that your life is on the line all the time, or if you go to the range to shoot, and then all the scenarios that you're getting are your life could be in danger, or they'll show you a video. And it's just like one of the analogies that I gave my son is that you can clean your house with ammonia and you can clean your house with bleach, but don't you dare mix the two. And so the reason that I say that is because some of the training that they received and some of the stuff that they see or some of the stuff that they showed us, once you ingrain that into my mind over and over again, then you put me out into a community that I may not understand. My response to it may not be what it needs to be.
But what is your thought about how we find police officers turning the general public into villains, where you see people who are going out to just have a nice time or who happen to be on the side of the road in a broke-down car or who happen to be in need of assistance, but somehow the first thing when they come on the scene, they see them as criminals or treat them as criminals instead of treating them like a part of the general public. And the fact that there seems to be no need or desire to de-escalate anything. Everything is escalated by them.
Well, some of those are training scenarios that they're given, like I said earlier, where and then you have to be involved into a community to understand it. One of the things that I was sharing with a person that one of my friends I spoke with today is that in all the areas that I spoke, I knew who all my crazy people were, quote unquote crazy people. The ones that were really kind of crazy, they do some stuff, but they were really harmless. And so you have to do what you have to be a part of the community. I ate lunch in the community. I ate breakfast in the community. Some of the local stores that I would go to, that's where I got my breakfast from. I got my breakfast from Sam's on Columbia Street. I ate at Genevieve's downtown in the Paramore District or Mr. Nicky's in the neighborhood. So you got to see people every day. I got my haircut at J. Henry's. And I didn't live there, but I spent my money there. I spent my time there, so you get to know people. And so when you have people that are coming into an environment that they are not attached to, and someone tells them, or through their training, or through their personal experience, or how they were raised, they are totally unfamiliar with it. And then sometimes they are not equipped, regardless of what kind of educational background they have, to come in and deal with that community. And I think there needs to be some things that I know the federal government does it. I don't think local agencies do it, but you could put some things in place to see if an individual has a propensity to deal with people based on their race or color more so, and use that as either a qualifier or disqualifier.
Well, what are your thoughts in terms of their consequence for when they do make bad choices? I mean, should we just say, you know, no harm, no foul, or you get a mulligan when a person is life has been taken and they did nothing that should have led to that?
Well, the thing is we need to look at, I'll say, not just the shootings, but all uses of force, because when you look, there are set patterns that are in place. If we were to look at it as a community and to say, well, hey, there's a problem, you may not necessarily get a shooting, but you may have an officer that may have a lot of resistance or violent resistance with people or what have you. That could be a precursor for possible deadly force in the future. And so I know we look at the shootings, but we need to pull back some covers on it and say, well, wait a minute. How many uses of force have this guy's had? And what are the consequences for using such force? Is there some retraining, or is there some other things that they need to do to either remove him from being in contact with individuals or even say that his job is in jeopardy? I think the process sometimes, what troubles me is, the process for charging an individual in most homicide cases might go a little slow because you got to find the suspect. But when you have a suspect and you have all the evidence, because the evidence is not going to change, when you have a suspect, I don't know why it takes a month or two to get through that when I know that it takes a short time to create probable cause to put somebody in jail. If you look at the television show, the first 48 hours that comes on television, it doesn't take them that long to find somebody and lock them up for a homicide. But I think sometimes you get a free pass on it. Or officers do at times. Or they'll piecemeal information out that they say, well, he had a gun. Well, what was he doing with the gun that would lead to his death? So we don't ask those very pertinent questions. But they'll put it out there for the media so that people will believe that, oh, man, he couldn't have a gun. Well, if possession of a gun may, or depending on the state that you are, may or may not be anything illegal. Not for mere possession. But if a black man has a gun, go ahead.
Let me ask you this question, because it's one that concerns me. You know, we have been pushing for citizens to get a gun, mostly by the GOP. It's been encouraging Americans, you know, if all Americans had a gun, then life would be safer. Well, let me just ask you this, because I've thought about buying a gun, but every time I think about it, I think about how more unsafe I am. And what I mean by that is, if I have a weapon and people already think of African Americans as being violent and being risky individuals when they have a gun, how is my life made safer by actually having a weapon that would even more enhance their bias?
Well, one of the things that I tell people is this is I saw a sheriff that went to the state senate in the state of Florida, is that first of all, police officers don't know bad guys or good guys that carry guns. So if I'm coming to a place and I'm responding to a call where there's a shooting, you might have all good intentions, but if you're out there with a gun, you're a bad guy. You're a bad guy. So guns don't make you safe. They absolutely don't make you safe. And then you have to question whether you're going to shoot somebody or not for something. The knowledge of it, I mean, now do I have a gun? Yeah, I still do. I have guns, but I have a deeper knowledge and understanding of what I could do with a gun and what I could not do with a gun. But the problem is the way they respond to us with a gun, so we have to deal with that. And I find it appalling that they would never, ever, I know in the black communities, they'll have you bring in guns for shoes, but they would never, ever suggest a whole rally, a gun rally in any white neighborhood asking them to turn in their guns. As a matter of fact, if you look at some of the stuff that's been happening on the campaign, you'll see that people get up and say, well, the president is trying to take my guns. But they won't do that in the black community. And my thing is this, if the black community really started to arm themselves, they would probably change the law.
Yeah, I believe you're right. I believe you're so right. I want to give some of my other callers an opportunity to ask you questions. 4337, would you like to ask a question?
Man, this brother has already answered everything that I've already had conversations about. He's confirmed. You know, I always kid with my friends. I said, if we want to get the NRA off our back, just have every black person go out that's of age and can do it, get a concealed carry, it'll change the law overnight. And like I mentioned yesterday, from an accountability standpoint, if you said to a police officer, now, if you use lethal force the wrong way, immediately your certification as a police officer is taken away until we can figure out what's going on. All this getting paid leave on the taxpayer's dime. See, when you make it impact them, even if you don't value black people, you value your ability to make income. And when it impacts your pocket, you'll back off from it. But I agree with, you know, everything the brother said. And, I mean, he's walked a mile in his own shoes. He's seen it. He's got the experience. He understands the whole gun concept. He just spoke how some people, regardless of what their color is, if they haven't been dealing with black people, and then you put them in that situation, it's mixing ammonia and bleach. And that's a powerful combination that can kill you. So until you get the training right and the understanding of the people, like he said, he went into the community. He was over with J. Henry getting his hair cut. He was at Miss Nikki's getting his food. You are inserting yourself among the people that you're dealing with, so it makes your job less stressful and people more comfortable with you being around them. And I think that speaks volumes. He spent his money in the community, and people see that.
Well, let me just say this, and this is my own take on it. You know, I'm 56 years of age, and one of the things I have said to people publicly is I think one of the reasons why there seems to be fewer cases of black officers shooting unarmed white people is because they have a sense that they can't make those kind of mistakes and maintain their law enforcement certification or may lose their freedom. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think somehow African-American law enforcement officers are somehow more or less likely to fire until they know for sure that there is a requirement to fire, and white officers have a less of a fear of that because of how they're treated?
Well, I think that what you deal with even with some of that, because you can still take a black officer if he doesn't have the, what I would quote, deem the black experience, and then his response could be the same. And so sometimes you look at even just his background, because I've even seen officers, and I hate to say that, that were black and just as vicious at times and responded to black issues. And so sometimes that could work against you, because they'll insert maybe one or two individuals into a unit knowing that he might sit silently and watch some things. But I'll even challenge or anybody who's out there that might be listening, go and research and see when has been any case where a black man has shot an unarmed white guy. Just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. And I think a lot of that is because of personal experience, where some things that we can say, well, that's not that serious, because I've gone to communities, you know, police community where people get loud. I'm there, they're loud, and, you know, they could be off the street, but that doesn't bother me. But for some other people, that might be scary as all get out, especially if they haven't been in an environment where people might be a little more what I refer to as animated.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, dealing with that, the experience that you have, and then you do gain experience over time. And I like to say there was a lot of good white officers that I worked with as well, too. But they understood the thing about the community. They understood that I had to go into this community and be part of it, per se, so that I can do that. I had an instance where I was training a guy who we went to a store, one of the neighborhood stores, and I would get me something to eat. As a matter of fact, I would actually go in and sit down and eat. And he asked me if he could stay in the car. And I asked him, I said, well, why do you need to stay in the car? He goes, well, you know, a safety issue. I was like, what is the safety issue? Because all the individuals that are getting up here getting breakfast is on their way to work. These people work in this community just like we do. And he said, well, it's a safety issue. Well, I can tell you that I ensured that he ate breakfast in that store every morning. We went there because he had to sit down. He had to be seated so that he would understand that just because black men walked around you, that they weren't going to cause you any harm or danger. It was absolutely necessary for his training. As a matter of fact, there was a box in his training form that said that how well did he get along with people of different ethnicities. And I know a lot of times that box on most forms go unchecked because people don't think it's important, but it is.
Well, truly, we are in. I have to say to you, you know, I went to South Carolina State. I spent a lot of time in South Carolina, and I've traveled up and down the roads of Florida, Georgia, in South Carolina very often. And it is just to me, and I'm not sure if it's because of the internet or it's because of smartphones or how quickly you get information, but there has never been a time when I have been more fearful of police officers than I am right now. I grew up in the 70s as a young man. I would ride my bike all over Orlando. I was places where my mom and father didn't even know I was, but I never was
over here.
Feared or got harassed by police officers.
Yeah, we'll go later.
I was never harassed by police officers in the 70s and the 80s?
Well, I think some of that has to deal with, too, that you're finding that there's more, you know, if you stayed on one side of town, you automatically knew who lived on that side of town. And as the world gets more mixed, that the experience is there until you get to see it a lot more. And because of the internet, it's there. But I'm here to tell you that during my time, there wasn't always a camera or anything. When I started in law enforcement in the early 90s, you didn't have camera phones where you could take a picture of it. But it didn't mean that it wasn't going on. But now people get to see it. And they get to see it quite often. And so if it didn't happen and you didn't see it on your local news, you were totally oblivious to it. Now it happens in North Carolina, someplace else like that, you get to see it.
Well, I guess I'm looking at the fact that, you know, and here in Orlando, you know, we had Fashion Square, we had Altamont Mall. You know, we went all over the place, and certainly there were times when people thought, you might be shoplifting or something, but you didn't get treated the way some of these people are getting treated now. You know, I mean, it just seems like there was a difference.
Well, you know, I've had my personal experience either here lately. I had a lady accuse me of trying to take her purse inside of a Publix. I'm a retired police officer. I'm a business owner, and I couldn't believe her response to that. But then again, I could. But
right.
I became a little indignified about the whole situation. I sure did. I've had my son stopped in my neighborhood because he was carrying fishing rods, and they said he couldn't fish. One of the neighbors decided that he was going to police the neighborhood. But because I talked to my son, I said, here's what you do. You get off the phone with me. You call the police. So when he called the police, came, and the gentleman decided to get out of his car. So he got out of his car, which is fine. But the problem that I had is that my son had summoned the police, and so the sheriff was talking to the gentleman rather than he was talking to my son. And so I approached him, and I told him I had a problem with that because he had actually summoned the police. And then they began to tell me that he couldn't fish in the neighborhood because there were signs that were posted. I said, well, because we live here. The only thing that is, that's a sign that's posted up by the Homeowners Association, and the state of Florida controls all the waterways anyway. And so he said, well, so what are we going to do? I said, no, he said he was going to follow him. Yes. So he said that, so what are we going to do? I said, I'm going to file stalking charges because he said he was going to follow him. I said, because you can't never be too cautious after the Trayvon Martin case. So after we filed stalking charges, I got an injunction to keep him 500 feet away from my son. He didn't believe that I would go to such extremes, but he was served.
He was white.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that it's important for us as a race of people that we need to start using some of the same rules to get rid of what we now call white privilege, because there are some individuals who are white who think they're beyond the law in regard when it comes to us and how we can enforce it or use it to our good. And certainly you are aware of how you can use it, but I think more African Americans need to become aware of how they can be used it and how it can be used for their good.
Well, I also think that some officers will refuse to still speak on the issue. They could go to the churches and they could see it happen, but they won't come out and say anything. Nothing at all. You can have shootings, and I'm still appalled over the idea that officers could shoot at a guy 24 times at a car, right? Which would be an attempted murder charge, or in the state of Florida, 10-20 life, and he only gets charged with aggravated battery. Sure, they take his license and certification, but if that would have been me, you, or I, 10-20 life. Guy just shot at George Zimmerman, and he's facing 20 years. But an officer can do the same thing, and the guy posed no threat whatsoever, and they quietly hushed that case away and gave him an aggravated battery. Did no jail time.
I remember that case. You're talking about the one where he fired inside of the garage.
parking garage. He's outside of the parking garage, the gate down there. His life was nowhere in danger. And they pled that case down. He let go 24 rounds at a car. And see, when stuff like that happens and we have elected officials and we have people who, they can see that and they make no noise. They say nothing. And
well,
then you end up with a shooting.
I want to thank you all for calling in. And this is it. Again, we went over, we were given an hour and a half, longer than an hour, and we've used the entire time up. But that's what these kind of my show is about, is us having the opportunity to discuss things and then be able to go out and discuss what we heard beyond just the radio show. We have so much to talk about. I want to make sure that all of you call in tomorrow at 6 p.m. and be recognized that we got to deal with what is going to be the outcome of the debate that's going to be held on tomorrow night. I look forward to talking with you all again. I want to say that, hey, thank you for your support, and continue to call in, and let's have these discussions. Take care, and I'll see you tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Thoughts, Love, and Reflection.
And rising, and when I get that feeling, I won't let you. suffering.